Our next case for argument is Sides against the City of Champaign. Wait a bit for the commotion to subside. It's a good thing they don't have internal combustion engines. Mr. Sides.
Thank you, Chief. May it please the court and counsel.
You can raise the podium. There's a switch in the right-hand side. Moving the switch the other way would raise the podium.
Wow, it works.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks. Both the Illinois and U.S. constitutions provide for a prohibition against ex post facto law. The Illinois Municipal Code requires municipal corporations to enact their ordinances through a legislative process, which our municipality, not unlike the rest of the state of Illinois, does through a city council meeting, a vote on a council bill. The penalty, what this case is, the issue I'm speaking of right now, regards not the ordinance itself, but the penalty provision not being in effect or properly published law at the time of the alleged offense. The plaintiff filed with the district court certified copies of council bills, agendas, meeting minutes, and several code revisions in an attempt to provide the court with evidence of this negative, that is that the penalty did not exist. Neither the code book containing supplement 29 of table 1 of section 1-24.
I don't understand how this argument is properly before us, since you were convicted in state court and the injury you are now asserting was caused by that conviction. How is there federal jurisdiction given the Rooker-Feldman Doctrine?
I'm not familiar with the Rooker-Feldman Doctrine.
It is unfortunately the first duty of counsel in every case to become familiar with relevant jurisdictional doctrines.
All right. Well, if it has anything to do with what we call absolute prosecutorial immunity,
It has nothing to do with it.
Okay. Thank you. Well,
In any event, don't you have that here?
What's that?
You do have prosecutorial immunity here, do you not?
Absolutely not, sir. There's cases throughout Illinois. I wouldn't call them a line, but because they're sporadic through the jurisdictions. But if a prosecutor certainly isn't immune from a murder, for example, committed by the prosecutor. And the reason is that absolute prosecutorial immunity is absolute for what they do with regards to what happens in the courtrooms, not outside the courtrooms. What they did here is they were faced with my motion to dismiss in the underlying court case, and in response to that, they, in their legislative function of their job description, not the prosecutorial function, they started outside of proper legislative processes, they started falsely publishing the law. And this not only was the argument, but like I said, was the evidence that I brought to the DC. They did nothing, they brought nothing to refute it. They have brought no law, i.e. ordinances, to show that it was in effect at the time. There's no immunity here at all. This is illicit acts that we're speaking of. I'm sorry that it's dirty, but it's true. Additionally, the Illinois Municipal Code provides that penal ordinances are not effective until 10 days after publication. And publication is required either in a book or pamphlet form or by a newspaper, defined with circulation and stuff. But they did neither.
Counsel, as I understand your argument, it is directed at the publication of the schedule or table of minimum fines for municipal offenses that would be payable in lieu of appearance in municipal court for municipal ordinance violations. And you were not punished pursuant to a minimum fine in lieu of appearance in this case. The penalty that was imposed against you has been on the books in Champaign for a very long time. So your ex post facto argument is lost on the merits for that reason.
I vehemently but respectfully, I'd have to disagree. The table was transferred into the original complaint, which seeks a minimum fine that was not in law at the time. Also,
that table only is implicated if someone wishes to pay the fine for a municipal ticket in lieu of showing up in court.
No, it's a table of minimum fines, and that's what, and the city used that table to create their complaint in the original underlying case. So thus I had to appear in court to, I would have enjoyed the opportunity to pay the minimum fine, which since it wasn't in the table, it should have been $0. I would have paid that fine and just stuck around and waited to get it expunged. But I fought it because of the illicit act of false publication. It's all on the record. Regarding the issue of equal protection, this
that
instance here,
as far as I can tell, is barred by the Rooker-Feldman doctrine.
Okay.
For your information, the doctrine says that injuries caused by decisions of state courts are not within the jurisdiction of the inferior federal courts. They cannot be the subject of litigation in federal court. The only litigation must go through the state system and to the Supreme Court of the United States on writ of certiorari from the decision of the highest state court in which a decision may be had.
Thank you, and that doctrine I submit would not apply because we're not here because of a decision of state court. I'm not suing for what they did in court or what the court did. I am suing for what they did outside of court. They falsified public records, sir. That's an independent action. As far as equal protection goes, this offense is very similar to the offense of conspiracy. It cannot be committed without the actions of two individuals contemporaneously. Officer Cunningham agreed to as much in his deposition. He also testified in his deposition that he and several police officers were in control of both suspects at the scene, and that during the time of the investigation there at the scene, while the suspects were being detained, there were four different police cars there. The only legal difference between the two suspects is one of gender, and gender-based government action must meet a burden of justification by showing that the challenged action serves an important governmental objective and that the discriminatory means are substantially related to the objectives. Officer Cunningham knew of and had control of the other alleged violator when he wrote his citation to appear in court to myself. And I'm in my rebuttal time, which I choose to save.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Sides. Mr. Kerchak.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Dave Kerchak, and I represent the city of Champaign. This court is correct that the portions of the city ordinances to which plaintiff refers have to do with a minimum fine that can be paid. There's no constitutional right
to
offer.
Can you raise your voice, please, so that we can all hear you?
I'm sorry. There's no constitutional right to give someone a minimal fine that they can pay, so even if there were no minimal fine.
To whether there is federal jurisdiction concerning that contention?
I did initially, and the court ruled against
the
it.
Application of the Rooker-Feldman doctrine.
I think it makes perfect sense in this case.
So why does your brief not mention the question?
Because
since it is the obligation of every lawyer to address jurisdictional issues and draw them to the court's attention.
I agree, and I understand, Your Honor. That wasn't an issue that we felt necessary to raise because we felt that we had other arguments.
Jurisdiction is the first issue in every case. You cannot decide that you have a good defense on the merits, so let's ignore jurisdiction. It is irresponsible behavior. It is unethical behavior. Mr. Sides, at least, pleaded ignorance. You tell me that you're aware of the Rooker-Feldman doctrine and just chose to put it in your pocket. I find that astounding.
I have no explanation. In this matter, Mr. Sides violated and was found to violate the Champaign Municipal Code regarding public indecency. The issue that he raises about equal protection is that there was a decision based on gender, which is not the case. There was no similarly situated individual under these circumstances. The videotape evidence shows that the two individuals were not similarly situated, and that the evidence in the case is that the female partner in this case was embarrassed, expressed that she was sorry for what she did, for her participation, and the police decided not to prosecute her. We believe that decision is reasonable and that the plaintiff has not met its burden to show that the other individual was as culpable in the case or was similarly situated. I would analogize this to a situation where a person is pulled aside by a police officer for speeding, and the police officer says, "Sir, do you know that you were speeding?" And he says, "Yes, I know I was speeding, but my wife is in labor and we're going to the hospital, and I want to get there as quickly as possible." And the police officer says, "Fine, I'll turn on my lights and siren, follow me, we'll get you to the hospital." A few minutes or hours later, another person is pulled aside, and they are asked about speeding, and they refuse to respond in any way, and that person gets a ticket. Plaintiff would have you believe that, no, if that person does not respond with some type of explanation, that the police officer needs to treat the second individual the same as the first. That's not the law. There are numerous other points raised.
This lady apparently was not pregnant, however, right?
No, that's correct. Apparently not. I don't know. Many, many, many other issues are raised in the brief by the plaintiffs. Whether there was an error by the district court in failing to grant a leave to amend. There were some other arguments that were raised regarding selective enforcement, et cetera. But unless there are questions regarding those specific issues, I am complete. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Sides?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. If indeed there's a jurisdictional problem here, the court has every right to be frustrated and rather intolerant of the parties. Based on my, I will repeat that this is not a suit where I'm suing because of what a court did or what a prosecutor did in their official capacity.
Ex post facto and equal protection grounds is exactly based on what the court did. These are defenses available in the state litigation. The only injury you received is on account of the state judgment, and it's squarely barred by the lack of jurisdiction. Any complaint about the arrest is outside of the Rooker-Feldman doctrine, but that has nothing to do with your ex post facto theory, for example.
Okay, all I can do is offer the history. That point may stand. The history is that the circuit court found my both ex post facto and equal protection to be irrelevant defenses, so they were brought in federal court as a subsequent suit. The only thing I wish to speak to is this position that somehow we are not similarly situated. They're taking that to an extreme. There's no case law to support, at least when I did my brief, there was no case law to support this position. What they've tried to say is that somehow we're not similarly situated because the female was remorseful. Officer Cunningham in his deposition. It's page 50 of number 107 in the record. He said that he...
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Case is taken under advisement.